They pledge allegiance to the flag. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, the glory forever. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You've all got a copy of the agenda. Any additions or corrections to the agenda?
We do have one deletion. It's Mr. Thomas, Director of Emergency Operations, regarding the UHF siren controller.
So moved.
I have a motion by Mr. Cole, second Mr. Jones, to approve the agenda with the one amendment. Joe Thomas. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips is not in the room. Mr. Rogers is not in the room. I guess they're in caucus together.
Yeah.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Yes, motion's carried. Approval of the minutes. In addition, there are corrections to the minutes of April the 3rd.
Second.
I have a motion, Mr. Jones, second Mr. Cole, to approve the minutes of April the 3rd. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips is still out of the room, as Mr. Rogers and Mr. Jones.
Yes,
motion's carried. Correspondence, Mr. Griffin.
We have a few items this morning. A letter first from Carolyn Della Camera thanking council for a donation and indicating they used the money to for their graduating seniors of Service Unit 14 to receive their lifetime memberships. Letter from program known as Shoes That Fit, thanking council for a donation. They provide shoes that fit to schools in 33 states. Letter from CASA San Francisco, thanking council for a contribution and indicating that they use the money in their program to help those who are experiencing poverty and homelessness. A letter from Woodbridge School District thanking council for a donation to the Woodbridge Elementary School's Accelerated Reading Program. A letter from Cindy Reneker to Mr. Cordry, Personnel Director, commending a special employee personnel office. Her name is Kim Beecham. And would you like me to read that letter in its entirety? Okay. Anyway, she's indicating that Kim Beecham goes over and beyond the requirements of her job. And a letter from the League of Women Voters thanking council for a donation that helped in the publication of a book or a pamphlet known as They Represent You. That's available to members of the general public. That's all the correspondence.
Any other correspondence from the end of the council members? Being none, we'll go to Mr. Baker.
Hey, the first item that I have on the agenda is regarding code enforcement and our constable concerns. And as we discussed at last week's meeting, we have met with our constable staff and staff from Planning and Zoning Department. And we're reporting back to you regarding some of the concerns that were and issues that were brought up by staff. We have three items to discuss today. Concerns, which I just handed out a list of some things. Signs, and Mr. Rickard is here regarding that and what the progress that we're making there. And also the status of the particular complaint that was brought up last week. So first, I'd like to just go over this list. We held a meeting. Mr. Godwin and myself met with constables, our constable department, and representatives from planning and zoning Friday and tried to get a better understanding of the issues there. And we put this together as a result of that meeting. What we'd like to do is receive input from the council today and then based on that, talk to our county attorney and then come back to the council with any suggested changes or to our policy. The first item that we on this list is that is regarding the delivery of summons. Currently, the law requires that summons for violations must be personally hand delivered, and this is a problem. Many of our property owners, of course, are from out of state or out of the county at least, and it's very difficult to personally deliver summons. What we'd like to see is a change that would allow us to just mail the summons to whatever addresses that we have and also post the notice on the door of the property that's concerned. And the second one is a possible change in fines. We talked about the current fine is $100 per day, and what happens is when the fine is levied, the judge typically will levy a fine of $100. The $100 is paid. Sometimes the problem persists, and in order for us to follow up on it, we have to go back to the judge with another case. It doesn't work like it's $100 a day till the problem's cured. Each time we have to go back, and then there's a $100 fine. So it's not a very it's not working out very well in terms of as incentive.
The judge can he can go up to $100, or he can do whatever he wants, right? I mean, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's up. That's right. It could be less. It's up to $100 a day.
It's up to him.
But if you remember, was it Mr. Davis took over the court system, the lawyer? We wrote him a letter asking if he raised our fees, would he maintain a minimum? Remember that?
Yep. Right.
And he said he would honor it. The JP Court would honor it. But right now, we really have it's a joke right now.
Yeah. One of the options here would be to make it a $500 minimum, and then we felt that possibly would
catch your attention.
Maybe with a $100 a day, but maybe with like a $1,000 maximum, something like that.
Why can't we get away from the second sentence where it says we have to go back every day and fine them on a daily basis? Why don't we try to reconstruct that
instead of going with a 500 minimum?
Well, I mean, just that it automatically
keeps rolling.
Yeah, it just keeps rolling. Every day they're in violation is another $100, another $100. Because that will get their attention.
Right.
Because if we have to still, if you change it and you still have to go back two or three times these people, each time you got to go to these courts and all that stuff, it'll, not be very feasible either.
Yeah, because right. Then they cancel, postpone and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, many people are getting, interested in enforcement nowadays, and I think we need to tighten that one up because we just don't want to go back.
And I'd have to ask Jim, is that a judge thing where he can just say that will be every day and why you're in violation, or can he know, or if we say that?
Well, there's a lot of wiggle room in the way the county code is now written. And I'm sure the judges say, well, I just determined today that it was a violation for the first time, so I'm just going to hit him with $100. It's not worded in such a way as
it's $100 every time, every day it clicks over.
And they may have not have cleaned up the problem. And so we go back out, and you guys paid $100, and then we find out, a month later, he's still there, still doing it, still persisting. So then we need to have something that we can...
Sometimes the judge will find the person guilty but suspend the payment of the fine, or they'll say that...
Well, we got to close the wiggle room.
They'll tell the person that if you do this... within a certain time period, there won't be any fine.
Right.
I mean, they.
Well, is it possible to?
We need to put it in
black
and white.
Get rid of the wiggle room in a new ordinance.
Sure, you're right. Right.
Right. It is possible.
We could certainly make that attempt. I can't assure you what would happen once it gets to court, but
right.
We need to take the gray areas out on our end.
Yeah. Boom. Right.
Yep.
So, I mean, is there, do we want to see if there's a consensus, Dave, as you talk about each of these issues so that we can then give you some direction? I don't know. I mean, I think the first one you just said sounds makes a lot of sense, and the second one makes a lot of sense. But
maybe take out the $500 minimum, but work on making the fines cumulative. How do you feel about $1,000 maximum, or do you want to?
Well, I don't know.
I think it should roll as a
Yeah, they got some of these cases are serious out there, and these people would rather pay the fine than correct the problem. They just keep doing it, and it just keeps the constables tied up in court, and they're like a laughing stock out there because they have no meat in their ordinance.
So, I mean, we could look at that option of being a real, real heavy-handed, and then we can always back off. So my suggestion is to go $100 a day cumulative, and then if we feel that's excessive, or will we have a public hearing on this, Jim?
It would have to be an
ordinance. Right, it would be a public. So maybe we'll hear some comments at a public hearing process.
Right.
We can relax it, possibly, if there's a need.
Okay. And then the next one is, we suggest not providing building permits for properties in violation or with outstanding property taxes or sewer bills. We began work on an ordinance, and we can, for property taxes and sewer bills, but I think we can add to that in violation, possibly, if you're
you might remember
with that.
When that was, an ordinance was prepared, it was referred to as a clean hands ordinance.
Right.
That a person couldn't get an approval or a permit or anything from the county requiring official approval as long as they owed some monetary obligation to the county. And I don't think that ever got introduced, but we could certainly
bring life back into it.
Put fines in there if they're not.
Okay. And then we suggest placing a lien on other property, such as land, to cover the cost of disposing of or demolishing dilapidated or abandoned homes, including manufactured homes. This was an option because right now we're in the situation where we have some money through First State Manufactured Homes Association and a state of Delaware grant, plus some county money. And what happens is, if there's, for instance, a manufactured home that's needs to be demolished, we pay to have it demolished and then send a bill to the owner of the home, and quite often we don't get paid. So, I mean, the idea is that if that individual owns property, other property, a lot or whatever, that we could possibly put a lien on that property.
Go ahead,
Mr. Griffin. Will that stand up? I mean, how can you lien another property because it's in violation on this property?
Well, let me ask Mr. Baker a question. Are you speaking of trying to put a lien on the property that the demolished home was located on?
Yes, it could be that, but sometimes it's a rental. It's a rental lot. The lot is rented, so that's one of the concerns.
But the
person could be a different property.
Mean like in a mobile home park?
Yeah, like in a mobile home park, right.
So who owns the home that you had to demolish? The tenant?
Tenant owns the home, yeah.
But the tenant may also own other land?
That was a thought.
You're probably going to have a procedure where you
notify,
go to court and get a judgment for the amount of money you had to spend, as opposed to some form of an automatic lien, because I'm concerned there that there'd be a question of a lien going on without due process. But a procedure could be established to do that.
But, Jim, why don't we just, I mean, you got to go back to the property owner. So in a mobile home park where they lease out, they should be controlling that anyway, and they should be concerned. So if there is an old structure that is unsafe and should be demolished, and we demolish it, we need to just go after the property owner, not the tenant who's probably vacated the area, hightailed it, who knows what. You'll never catch it, and he may not own anything, but the property owner is the guy. That's where the buck stops, with the property owner. He's allowed that violation to persist. He's also made income off of it.
What portion of these are in mobile home parks versus just scattered lots?
Probably not many.
Not the mobile home.
Come here, repeat.
And stay there so we can drill you with a lot of questions.
Stay right up here.
name's Peter R. Dirks, County Constable for the last 4 years. The problem is not mobile home parks, sir. The problem is individual lots down here along the road. We take them to court. Most of the time, they fine them, and that's it. Then we got to go right back and start over again. We still have the same problem. You got a banded trailer. They're not doing nothing with it. Some judges got their stuff in a little hot water with us. If you don't do it, take it off in 30 days, I'm going to give you 5 days in jail. But there was a big stink about that. But legally, they could do it because he was in contempt for not doing it. But mobile home parks is not the problem. Mobile home parks, if I may use as an example, I know this for a fact, pot nets, for example, they're very professional. They go in there and they'll put a levy against the trailer and they'll sell it and they'll buy it. And they'll come in there and they'll tear it out of their stuff. And the problem's over with. They'll put a new home in there. But mobile home parks is not the problem.
Oh, I didn't think they were. He was just bringing. Raised that issue about being on rental land, but I kept saying you go back to the property owner, so it's the mobile home park owners.
How much money are we talking about, and is this county money or grant money that we use to demolish these homes?
That's only
combination. It's a combination of money. We receive money from the state of Delaware.
That's the maximum.
How much of the money that we're trying to recover would be county money? Are we talking a couple hundred? Are we talking several thousand?
Typically, the cost is $2,000 roughly.
$2,000 to $3,000. It's all according to condition of the mobile home itself.
$2,000. Yeah.
If it's loaded with junk, they're going to charge extra. May I comment on something you said a while ago, sir? While I'm up here, you're talking about the fines. What we would like to see is the first day $500 and $100 every day after that. I think that would help the problem.
Okay, but still cumulative.
Yes.
That's what we were trying to discuss. I'm all for making it very, very harsh and going to a public hearing with something very strict. Then we could back off if we all get, if there's a consensus to say that was too harsh.
Most of the people we deal with, they do basically what we say. We don't have no problem with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, and then...
Was there any consensus on, let's just discuss that before we go on, at least,
I think
placing liens on properties?
Can we also include that? Like, I know we have issues with grass cutting and trash and dumpsters and all that. Can that all be thrown in on that same?
Yeah, After Mr. Baker finishes, I'm going to sort of give you a quick rundown on the code.
But is there support for
yes.
Leaning property owners? Okay.
I got no problem.
Okay. And then the fifth one is there is a section of the code I think Mr. Griffin's going to talk about that actually enables county employees who work at transfer stations to pick up trash that they find. And we used to provide that service. But what the constables are typically asked to do now is to clean up what we would consider trash on someone's property that may be like an old appliance or whatever. And the constable's concern is that without a court order, they don't feel comfortable going out and picking up an old washer or whatever that's laying in somebody's yard, that, they don't feel that they have the legal right to do that.
Well, why are you doing that anyway? Why are constables picking up trash?
Or violating them, because we don't.
It's complaint driven.
I
know that, but still.
Are we physically?
Ira, can you pick up a washing machine?
No,
I didn't think you could.
Now, if you're mad, you could.
Are we physically cleaning property?
This is an old ordinance here. This is old.
Years ago, when we had the transfer station, this is old landfills. We used to pick up, find like bags of trash along the road,
outside the gates. Look up. Outside the gates is what I thought we used to do.
Outside the gates, and occasionally in other areas, we get a complaint that there's trash on along the side of the road. We look at, determine who's it. Yeah, names and all that. And that's the section. But the constables felt like they needed a court order. They didn't feel comfortable doing that kind of work without a court order. So,
well, I mean, are the constables riding around, if there's an old sofa, something a little size to it, sitting somewhere alongside the road, they don't have the vehicle, do they, or the manpower? Did we send out a couple of men to pick up a sofa?
Yeah. Hire
it. Yeah.
Do we hire it? How do we do that? Yeah. Okay. Who pays for the people we hire?
Hire one, something.
Call the prison. Let them. Yes. Those guys do it.
They do.
I'm Myra Hitchens, and I've been working for the county constable, and I've been here approximately going on 6 years. The section that Mr. Baker's talking about is that section 80.4, removal by the county, recovery of county expenses. And what I'm talking about is this section should be taken out. Take this whole section right out of here, because it gets our constables in trouble.
And how does it do that, Ira?
Well, first of all, I was going to explain this in the case that I've got. Because the gentleman, when you read this, that's saying, if we can't do it, then get the county to do it, and let the county pay for it. And that's the way this reads, right in here. Let the county come down, let the county clean it up, and then let the county recover their expenses.
Is that practically happening? Are you cleaning property up within the last...
No, because we can't do that.
You don't have the manpower and the equipment and that sort of thing to do that.
We don't have the transfer stations anymore. We don't have trash trucks anymore.
Right. Never did.
Yeah. What IRS is talking about here is that the enforcement of this section is delegated entirely under current county code to the transfer station division, which no longer exists.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, he's right. I concur with that. We ought to just take it out because I don't...
Put something new if you need something. Just rewrite it if we need something at all about that complaint.
Yes, it needs to be taken out there. I can tell you that.
Thank you, gentlemen. All right, thank you.
Consensus strike number five then, right?
Just take that whole section out. Then that section does address trash and whatnot.
Well, look at the section. Take out the bad parts. And if there's anything...
There are other, as you'll see in a minute, there are two other sections of the code that also address the same thing.
Right. Okay.
And then the last item, or number six here, is we suggest charging a permit fee to remove old manufactured homes for demolition to be moved to another site. And the permit would enable the county to track the old home, where right now, and it should be a minimal amount, maybe $50 or something. The idea would be that we could track that home to be ensured that it's demolished or that it's moved to another location and placed properly and not just left on the property or moved somewhere or whatever. Right.
Tucked in the wood.
That's probably a good idea. We could just amend the chapter 62 on fees for that.
So,
and I think Mr. Godwin's going to talk about the last two items here that we have.
On that fee for removing or demolishing a mobile home, what section of the county government would track that?
Assessment. That would be
zoning or assessment, or
that would be planning and zoning.
Gentlemen, I've been working with some very patient neighbors of ours who are county residents, not municipal residents, but it looks like they're municipal residents because they live very near Rehoboth. In the area between Rehoboth and Dewey, there are some residences that are definitely in our jurisdiction, but are very much an urban environment of rather intensely used residential properties. I want to share some pictures with you. The pictures that I'm giving you are stapled together because they are all of the same property. There are three different properties displayed here with several pictures from each property. The one that we've had the most problem with has eight automobiles on one property, and all of these automobiles have been there so long that grass and vines have grown up around them. Not only are they not registered, they're not in a condition of use, which means you couldn't drive any of these cars if you had to. They're simply being stored on this property. Now, legally, we've had a great deal of difficulty prosecuting this case. We do have code that says that you're only allowed to have two unregistered automobiles on your residential property. In fact, according to the tax map, this property is four small lots. Only one of them has a home on it, and the other three are, as you can see, overgrown with grass, vines, trees, overgrowth, and old rusty automobiles. The neighbors have been complaining, and I and the constable have been working with these folks since October of last year.
Every one of them have?
Excuse me?
Oh, is this one property that we're looking at?
As they're stapled together, they're stapled together because they represent just three properties.
Okay.
One has, as I said, 8 automobiles on it. Another property has a blue tarp over the roof. It's been like that for, I'm told, over somewhere around 3 years. This roof has been under repair, according to the owner, but it's been just covered with a blue tarp. The same house also has plastic at the windows, and it has, it's in an urban environment where there are homes all around it that are used every day by regular folks like us.
Do people live in this house?
I'm not sure.
We're not sure.
They can't live in it.
There's another property there that really doesn't violate the code. It has 2 unregistered cars on it, and the front porch is full of clutter. This property really doesn't violate our code, I don't think, but it is very unsightly. So,
and these are in MR districts?
Yes.
You're getting into something where you go try to enforce that.
I understand, but I wanted you to see it. I wanted you to see it because the neighbors pointed it out to us. I recognize that there's little we can do about that. But what I would like you to consider is that we are the only county in the state of Delaware that does not have a national property maintenance code. The other two counties have this code in their county code, and it acts as a tool or a structure for you to set up property maintenance rules and regulations.
Is this something like the one we had in October the 28th, 1998?
I don't know.
We had
I wasn't
3,000 people at Deltec.
I was pretty busy in Newark back then.
Well, if it is, count me out.
Okay.
Okay, right now. I'm not going through that again.
Okay.
Me too.
I don't think it is.
Life is too short.
It's not.
Right.
Okay.
Can't take pressure.
In any event,
I remember the date and the time.
How many people?
Don't Mr. Phillips.
I think I would like to recommend a couple of things for Mr. Griffin to address as he tries to help us solve these problems, these urban residential problems. Number one, the property that has 8 automobiles, if in fact it said 2 unregistered cars or vehicles allowed on an improved property, that would help. And if you think about it, how many unimproved lots really should have old junky cars on them anyway?
Well, we don't permit, I don't think how a, you can't get a permit for a shed, just to have a shed placed on a vacant lot.
That's correct.
Right, that's not a permitted, but yet we seem to be lenient enough to let any junk cars
well,
in there, right?
Well, not only that, but one property has a shed on it, and it's a separate lot, unimproved, it has a shed and an old car.
Okay.
And there's no home on it.
Right.
So we could simply...
But we have a code to take care of that.
Well, we don't in that...
A shed we do. Is that if I'm not...
Well, we yeah, kind of. We do the shed. But the two unregistered automobiles are allowed. If we were simply to change the wording to either no unregistered cars, or if you didn't want to be quite that firm, you could say 2 unregistered automobiles are allowed only on improved lots, which keeps folks from placing old junky cars on empty lots that aren't being used. There is a strong argument for having the opportunity to have an unregistered car at your home if you're restoring an antique or if you're doing something like that. And some folks do that, and that's not harmful use in the community. But what you've seen in pictures here, I doubt that any of you would like to live next door, and I wouldn't want to. So we need to, I believe, ask Mr. Griffin to try and address some code amendments that might give us the ability to enforce these old cars be removed. If you'd like to hear from the neighbors who live near this, several of them are here this morning, and would like an opportunity to just mention to you the fact that what I've told you is true. We have been working together for 8 months.
But the person that has 8 cars on it, we can do something about that. Is that
well, we've already tried.
No, we've had tried. One that we've arrested. He's been taken to court time after time after time. He's got. I go by there probably once or twice a week, and I see he's got 7 or 8 cars now. Every car is piled with junk inside the vehicle. The pickups are piled round up with junk. They've grown up. You can't hardly see some of them because they're grown in grass.
Right.
He's been to court, paid fines, and he's still there.
We've got an added problem in that
Chapter 71 of your county code says not more than two currently unregistered or uninspected vehicles owned by the occupants. So it could be owned by somebody else and it wouldn't come in within this.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That are owned by the occupants that do not pose a threat to the occupants or other person's health and safety. So you have to prove that those cars, more than two, pose a threat to safety, welfare.
Well, why don't we turn that around and forget about safety and go to aesthetics that, you know, we're looking for.
Well, I mean, I'm just telling you what the code says.
Well, that's why we got to change this code.
Then you've got another section of the code, as you're going to see in a minute, that says you can have two as long as they're stored inside of a building.
Well, see, nobody cares about anything inside a building, right? Right.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Right, no, I agree.
A lot of them are being restored.
The code, yeah. The code section that our constables try to use is section 115-191, which reads parking and storing vehicles and trailers. It says no more than two automotive vehicles or trailers of any kind or type without current license plates should be parked or stored on a residentially zoned property other than in completely enclosed buildings. One of the pictures I gave you shows a car, a Porsche, parked under a little shed. And it has a current tag on it, but I tell you that it's not the tag that belongs in that car because it begins with C. And a little Porsche is not a commercial vehicle. So the tag probably came off something else just because the console was there to make a take a picture. So they it said it's got a current tag on it,
right?
But the car is not registered. So the language, I think, is faulty in that case.
I think it expired in 06.
Yeah.
September of 06. Right, but
they
the point
to, they
is,
have changed that. You can't put a C tag on a car now.
You can put a
This car has. I'm sure this car hasn't been through inspection to get the C tag put on it.
Right.
My point is that this person that we've been working with knows exactly what they're doing.
Sure.
And they understand that where they can get around the law, and they've been pretty successful at it. Because again, our law could probably use some tuning.
I think our whole book could use some tuning.
Great idea. So the other issue that we heard about last week, which our constables don't seem to have a big problem with, are boats. We don't seem to have a lot of complaints about boats, but you need to think about two or three different scenarios. There's a boat laying in someone's yard with no motor. There's a boat on a trailer. There's a boat inside a building, outside a building. So if we're going to look at boats, that might be relatively complex, particularly in the resort areas. But we did hear loud and clear last council meeting from a neighbor about his complaint of a neighbor's boat or boats.
But they also have to be registered to the state of Delaware. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I realize the boat is one way and the trailer is another way.
Correct.
Right.
But our constables haven't reported a lot of difficulty with boat complaints other than the one you heard last week.
But they're out there.
Yes.
They're out there, and I think we ought to address, if we're going to address the vehicles, we ought to look at a way to address boats and trailers again, you know, with the same thing, because there is a tendency for some people down there, instead of collecting cars, they collect boats.
I don't think we have anything in the code that addresses boats unless they're on a trailer.
Right.
Because if they're on a trailer, I think that's
considered a vehicle.
Trailer's the vehicle.
The trailer's the vehicle, and the boat's on the trailer. But and then a lot of boats aren't even required to be registered because they may not have a motor.
Right.
And
was it
we could look at something in regard to number
16
of boats
feet?
And sizes right. of boats and that kind of thing.
Well, I think that we could incorporate it in one ordinance. Boats, cars, trucks, and it all. Motorcycles.
What are your thoughts on the suggestion of with the vehicles? Change to allow two unregistered vehicles per property with improvements, and that would give us.
And that would that take out the possibility? And then whoever to register, it doesn't make a bit of difference, and that's that.
I have a question for Hal. What is this national property maintenance thing you're talking about? What does it allow?
I don't believe it talks much about cars. We would have to adjust that. It talks mostly about property maintenance as far as a house that the gutter's fallen off or the door's falling off. Sort of boilerplate here about unsafe structures.
Is that a rental or is that a home owner occupied?
It can be either.
Not with me, it won't.
Well, my point is, you can do whatever you want with it, but it basically, right. What this National Property Maintenance Code does is it sets up a structure for you to flesh out how you want. It's more about the structure than it is the detail.
Oh, my God. And it's exterior.
Yes.
When it comes to unregistered vehicles, we're sitting here talking about how they seem to be okay, two unregistered vehicles. I think we should have if it's possible, to have a definition of what that means. It can't be
okay.
It can't be an unregistered vehicle with weeds growing through it. It's going to be an unregistered. It could fall. I mean, there ought to be a category. Is it like antique vehicles? You know, whatever, restoration. And there has to be maybe some kind of something happening to these vehicles as opposed to just sitting there because the guy's too cheap or whatever.
You may be able to define that by calling it a car in disrepair.
But
if
whatever,
the car won't start and drive, then it's in disrepair. If it's not tagged, it could be a 1929 Hudson somebody's restoring. And I don't think there's any real intent to jeopardize the privilege of doing
that.
That's
what I'm saying. I'd like to see some
definition
for that.
I think most people would have them probably in a shed.
Correct.
A good car will be in a shed, or right?
Correct.
Correct. And if they'll have the exempt tags and all that good stuff.
But in this case, I think our constables could testify that some of these cars, of the eight cars I've shown you, have been in the same spot on the same property with the same weeds for many years, not just a few months.
Yeah, of course, definitely when you got ivy growing over.
The easy thing would be if you didn't allow any.
Right.
Of course, when you...
That's on Sussex County.
Correct.
No, I agree.
I've heard from the peanut gallery.
That's on Sussex County.
How about a time period, Jim? Is there a way to put a time period that two unregistered vehicles would be permitted on a improved parcel or a lot for a time period of?
Sure.
You do that.
I mean, you can do anything. You tell us what you're looking for, and we can try to come up with it.
I mean, that would be one way to take an unregistered vehicle. If it's a value, they're going to be doing something with it and possibly putting a time period on it.
Of course, now people who have the intent to restore a vehicle or a boat may let it sit there for years. And every year they say, I'm going to get to it, and they just don't.
So, well, I understand that, but I'm just saying maybe that's a way to look at
it. I wouldn't clog it up too much.
Even by just adding per improved parcel,
clean up the
that would help.
That would help, like in the situation that Mr. Godwin just presented here, where the individual owns three or four lots. What he's doing is he's having two vehicles per each lot.
Or if you wanted to make it zero cars, you could always set up an appeals process where a person who is genuinely in the process of restoring and showing a 1929 Hudson, there could be some provision where he would get a variance to do that, and it wouldn't cost a lot of money, wouldn't take a lot of time, but there are ways to protect yourself from injuring the unintended.
Well, if you say per improved lot, that means you can't have any on an unimproved lot.
Correct. That would be a big help.
I think that
would be a big help.
You could also reduce the number allowed on an improved lot from, if you didn't want to allow none, you could reduce it to one.
Maybe, Jim, could we say in an MR district there'd be only maybe none? In an AR district, there could be two. HR districts, there should be zero, you know, because some of these urban areas, it's not suitable to be collecting cars.
If you want to be collecting cars,
you ought to be out in the country somewhere collecting cars.
Exactly. This property that we're talking about near Rehoboth looks like a sizable piece of residential property, when in fact it's 450 by 100 lots.
Yeah, dinky lots.
Right, and there's eight cars on it.
It's true.
Why don't we look to also the zones, the in the code, what is permitted in a zone? So that would also tighten things up in these areas that are more urban.
Gentlemen, I think we're trying to get this thing too broad, too quick. It's going to get bogged down, and nothing's going to happen. If you're going to extend it as far and to get all this stuff incorporated in one ordinance, as we're talking about this morning. What are you going to do about these farmers who have equipment that they pull into woods, tractors, combines, and weeds and everything grow up around them? Are we going to go to that extent? Are we going to go there too? I mean, I can take you to places where they got machinery graveyards. Mm-hmm. And so is that going to be included in this? I mean, we've spent almost 45 minutes on this morning. We need to get moving.
There is an exemption for farm equipment.
There you go. Yeah. We already got
info,
it.
Right? That's not... I don't think that would be
an active
covered.
Farm. Yeah, we could have an easily an exemption for active farming. But
well, this may be something you want to think about for a week and get back to.
Been thinking about it for 20 years. It comes up every year. It's time to get somebody working on it.
Farmers exempt.
Well, the person who's going to work on it is going to have some clear direction. Otherwise, they're going to be shooting in the dark.
Well, I think we just went down.
Didn't we say
we had a consensus, Jim, on a lot of this stuff? And on Mr. Godwin's last two? Is there consensus on addressing those also? I mean,
I agree. Yeah, I've heard some things discussed, but I haven't heard a majority of you say do this.
I agree with Mr. Dukes. I think you're just going way outside the boundaries of what is practically possible. I mean, if you want to take a portion of the code and fix it, let's take it incrementally. You're just asking for trouble if you try to do this all comprehensive rewrite of the code, in my opinion.
I agree. There's trash all around the county when you drive through, and it irritates me every time I go by this person's house and I see all these vehicles piled up with trash and refrigerators and everything else in the yard, and it's supposed to be an agricultural use, he says. I think we ought to address that issue and
keep moving.
I don't think we can get it all done today in this one ordinance. Maybe we just need to amend it as we go along, but let's get one thing done at a time. Give the constable some teeth so they can enforce this thing, and so when it goes to court, they got something to back them up. Then we'll move on to the next issue later. But I think this morning we're getting way too much in this thing that it's going to get bogged down, get nowhere.
So you don't want us to work on the cars situation?
Yeah, I think the car situation is my concern is the big problem. The cars and
I agree.
And unregistered cars and trash, you know.
I think with the suggestion that if you do two vehicles unregistered on an approved,
it just needs to be defined.
Just come back with a very tight draft ordinance, and then we'll work on something we have in front of us instead of just taking shots at it.
Yeah,
now, the other six issues here, sometimes this is just a little change of wording in the gym and some of these issues. Could somebody review those and say this could be just a change of wording? These may not require, gentlemen, a whole lot. So doing nothing.
It's going to still have to go to public hearing. But
we understand that, but we got to get somebody some direction. And
I think we went through 1-6 and said that we were cool with them.
But wait a minute.
On this last,
Gail's just gave it, and Vance both just said we've got it too broad. Are we going to look at all these or not?
I think we have to look at them individually and bring in ordinance.
We need to look at all of them as we go and not
the direction Jim's asking for.
Is
what do you want him to do?
Well, I think before I start to prepare an ordinance, I'm going to need to sit down further with Mr. Baker and possibly some of the gentlemen from the constable's office. Try to come up with something that they think is workable from the enforcement point of view.
All right, can we do that then? Can we? So we don't have to. If somebody asks me, I'll say yes. We are working on it.
Yeah, let me have five more minutes of your time, if I could.
All right,
absolutely.
I want to hand out. What I'm handing out to you now is excerpts out of your current county code.
Come on, James, pass it out.
You pass those down, sir.
Please hurry.
I just want to show you what the enforcement scheme looks like. In chapter 71,
so I don't get one.
Are you short?
Is
Jones got two of them?
I'm sorry. I didn't know you were down there, George Carter.
In chapter 71. It's when it talks about conditions that pose imminent threat to health, safety, and welfare. Those have to be enforced by the building code office. Look at the next page, and I've highlighted some of the things that are included. And if you look at the next page beyond that, 7111, it talks about motor vehicles. But that reference to motor vehicles requires proof that it affects adversely health, safety, general welfare. Then look over into chapter 80. That section has to be enforced by Transfer Station Division, which no longer exists. In 80.3 and 80.4 talks about grass and weeds, trash. That's the section that requires Transfer Station Division to go in, clean it up, and put a lien on. So that's really unworkable because we don't have a Transfer Station Division anymore. Then 115-191 is the one that the constables use about cars, because it doesn't require proof that the existence of the unregistered vehicle presents a safety hazard. So you got one section of the code saying cars have to be a safety hazard, another one saying they don't. So we need to clean up these three inconsistent sections. You've got enforcement here by building code, transfer station division, and planning and zoning. So probably that
should be
all that duplication needs to be taken out.
Do you have an assistant attorney that we could put on this?
We do.
I mean, maybe that's the thing is
to
get one of your assistants to start working with this with the staff and make some progress on it. So a year from now, we don't look up and haven't done anything.
Every day.
So that would be the direction I would like to see the county go in.
What is a noxious weed?
Well, we would take out the enforcement by the non-existent agency.
Right.
We would probably
Definitely.
Take out the requirement that unregistered vehicles must be proven to be an adverse effect on health and safety. Just, you know, prohibit any number of them over a certain number.
But could your assistant look at this list that we first had and plus what you just handed out? I mean, look at the whole package.
We can do that.
And just put one person on this whole issue and see if we can.
But the reason I was showing you this is that it sort of is a patchwork, and the constable's office really has to kind of pick and choose in order to even be able to bring a case.
Right.
And if a person who's savvy says, well, there's another section of the code that says it has to be a safety hazard.
And I'm sure the judges don't like all this confusion.
They don't. So they, if they see a reason to toss it, they will, and that often happens.
Now, Mr. Baker,
to update them.
Let me just ask one simple question. Has there been any kind of direction given to you today on this issue? And what would that be?
Could you officially
give me your response?
Officially?
Well, I think it seems that there's consensus,
at least
more or less, on the first six items.
Correct.
I think there was one exception, the transfer station thing. I think we were.
That's all house cleaning, sir.
Yeah. And we would be glad to meet with Mr. Griffin or his staff and try to gradually take care of these. What we try to do is prioritize these in our meeting with the constables. So the first two would probably give them some, you know, teeth right away to improve their enforcement provisions. So they would probably be the ones that we would come back to you soon.
You think 3 months, 6 months, something? I mean, some kind of time frame that we can, people out there in the county can.
It shouldn't take long. I would say within 3 months we should be back to at least with several of these for you.
Okay, and the number seven, you said the first six there was a consensus. Wasn't there a consensus on the last two? I thought everybody was kind of concerned about vehicles and trailers and boats.
It did seem there might be consensus on that, on the vehicles, to allow two unregistered per property with improvements,
I think it has to be done by zoning classification. I mean, it just can't.
By zoning, want to go with zoning classification?
Exemptions.
Okay.
Dale brought
Look
up
at that.
Agriculture. Yeah, obviously an active, active farming
right.
operation.
Right. Got to be exempt. Right?
Those are legit, but right. with somebody who just has some vacant land,
it's
not farming it. Maybe that's not legit.
But just like that 115, 191, the way that's written is, it says no more than two motor vehicles or trails of any kind and type without current license plates. It don't say that license plate has to go with that vehicle. The judge can throw that out.
Right.
So you got nothing
to clean.
You need
up.
To say it has to be registered with that serial number to the Delaware Motor Vehicle Registration. This is way outdated. All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
And then, so we'll get back to you within a few months and have something here with some ordinance changes to for your consideration.
Next.
Mr. Ricker is here today, and he has been working with Mr. Burrell on